This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
In order for us to have a thriving democracy, you need to have a robust civil society that engages in debate, whether right or wrong, and helps make sure that all voices are heard, rather than just the voices of sort of the concentrated wealth and power.
Money doesn't grow on trees, but if you're a paper company, trees are definitely how you make your money. Paper production is one of the leading causes of rainforest loss. Nearly 4 billion trees worldwide are cut down each year for paper. The result of the massive deforestation is felt as loss of habitat for multiple species, erosion, diminished air quality, and of course, increased global CO2 levels. Fortunately, there are people working to promote better paper practices. My guest today on Sea Change Radio is Rolf Skaar, head of Greenpeace's forestry campaign. He brings us up to date on the latest Greenpeace campaign to push paper companies into adopting more sustainable forestry practices. While some companies are embracing the opportunity and partnering with Greenpeace, others are on the defensive, feeling the impact that the digital age has had on the paper industry in general. Trying to get everyone onto the same page, Greenpeace is advocating for policy change to help save the trees. I'm joined once again on Sea Change Radio by Rolf Skaar. He's Greenpeace Forest Campaign Director. Rolf, welcome back to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks for having me, Alex.
So why don't you catch us up on some of the work that you and your colleagues at Greenpeace have been doing to try to protect our world's forests?
Yeah, Greenpeace has a goal of achieving zero deforestation around the world. And that sounds like a bold task, and it is. But more and more companies and governments are starting to see it as something that's realistic and doable. But in order to achieve that, we've got to start where the problems have been the worst. And if you look around the world, Indonesia is one of those forested countries where deforestation has been the worst in recent years. As a matter of fact, the Guinness Book of World Records gave Indonesia the dubious distinction of having the world's highest recorded rate of deforestation in recent years. And so that's a place where we're spending a lot of our efforts.
And in Indonesia specifically, there's been a lot of pressure put on one of Europe's largest banks, Banco Santander, to try to have them stop financing a paper company that does a lot of business in the Indonesian rainforest named April. Why don't you give us an overview of that and where things stand right now?
Yeah, in order to achieve zero deforestation, you know, we start in a place like Indonesia, and then we try to figure out what it is that's driving the deforestation. So, you know, at the end of the day, it's usually dollars and cents. And in this case, the number one deforester in Indonesia right now is a big pulp and paper company called April. That's short for Asia Pacific Resources International Limited, which is a mouthful. But what folks need to know about April is that they are clearing large swaths of rainforest and carbon-rich peatlands to establish plantations, monoculture plantations, to make pulp and paper. And that's a really bad thing for people, for endangered species like Sumatran tigers, of which there are only 400 left, and also for our climate, because some of those carbon-rich peatlands store gigatons worth of greenhouse gas emissions. So that's got to end, clearly. And so using the dollars and cents approach to making change in the world, what we found out was that this big bank, Banco Santander, which has hundreds of branches in the eastern U.S. and is very popular in Europe and other parts of the world, was actually financing this destruction, was giving April the money it needed to do more deforestation. And we didn't think that matched with Banco Santander's sort of public face of trying to be a responsible bank.
Now, could April still thrive without Banco Santander's backing?
Well, they could probably look for other financing, but it's clear that, you know, if they were to pull out millions of dollars, that means that the company takes a hit. And thanks to thousands and thousands of people speaking up and letting Banco Santander know that they expect more from banks like them. Banco Santander agreed to not finance forest destruction through April and to actually not extend the current loans that they have to the company. So that's pretty important. At the same time, there's a lot of companies who are cutting business contracts with April. So in other words, not buying the pulp and the paper that they're making. So they're getting the message loud and clear from different parts of their business units that, you know, deforestation is bad for business. And if they want to continue to grow and thrive, they're going to have to change some of their business model.
Now, how rooted to the Indonesian rainforest is April's model? How would a April official respond to this conversation in your estimation?
Well, and we're hoping they will change their ways, and we think they can. But so far, what their response has been is to sort of put lipstick on a pig, to borrow a phrase. You know, they put out a quote-unquote sustainability plan just over a year ago. And to a lot of people's disbelief, the sustainability plan itself admitted that they're planning on continuing to raise rainforests to the ground for many years to come. So that to most people, that would not be considered a sustainability plan. And so they're sort of dressing up the same business as usual and then trying to kind of sell people a bill of goods. But most of their business partners, folks who, you know, are in the business of buying pulp and paper products, aren't buying it. And it's clear that the longer they hold on to this old business model, the more they're going to lose money and sort of lose traction in the international marketplace.
Greenpeace has targeted April, but how dissimilar is their model from their competitors?
Well, we're targeting their deforestation, so we have a little motto internally, which is we don't have any permanent friends or any permanent enemies. So the idea is it's not personal. We're not trying to destroy your business. We're trying to take care of deforestation. So if you want to change the way you do business, we'd be happy to work with you. And so that is exactly what happened with one of April's key competitors about 2 years ago, a big pulp and paper company called Asia Pulp and Paper, or APP for short, was the number one forest destroyer at the time and was for many years a leading deforester in Indonesia. And after years of campaigning by NGOs like Greenpeace, they came out with a forest conservation policy, which has a lot of parts to it, but the most important piece of the framework was stopping the deforestation that they had been so infamous for many years. And they did that on February 5th of 2013. They've got a lot of problems still to sort out. As a matter of fact, some of the social issues that come with being a large pulp and paper company or large commodity producer in Indonesia have yet to be untangled. So, for example, who owns what land? Who has the rights to what land? Oftentimes, the right to clear a certain area or to make a pulp and paper concession in a certain area was granted by one part of the government, but another part of the government gave out a conflicting land title, or local people weren't consulted when those land titles were given out, and they're upset about that, and they have a legitimate right to those landscapes, and they dispute that. So there's sort of a mess when it comes to land use planning in Indonesia and a lot of developing countries that is a little bit unfamiliar to us in the U.S., where, you know, people know where their property lines are and that sort of thing. This is a very difficult landscape to deal in, and APP has got a lot of work to do in terms of its own engagement on a lot of these important social issues. But they have stopped the deforestation that they've been responsible for many years, and that's put more pressure on April, because while APP, their key competitor, has said enough's enough, we understand now, we've gotten the message, in order to do business around the world, we need to at least not deforest rainforests for, you know, throwaway paper products. April's continued with the business as usual, unfortunately.
This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, from the redwood forests to the Gulf Stream waters. Oh yes, This land belongs to you and me. As I went roaming that ribbon of a highway, I saw above me that endless skyway. I saw below me that golden valley. Yes, this land belongs to you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the redwood forests to the Gulf Stream waters.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Rolf Skar. He's the Forest Campaign Director for Greenpeace. What do you attribute most of the success with the APP engagement to? Was it a grassroots campaign, or were you able to engage at a high level of APP's management to try to get that message through? And kind of a subset of that question is, do they have like a chief sustainability officer now in place at APP, some people within APP who can do a complete supply chain assessment of APP's carbon footprint?
Well, good questions. I mean, I think the global campaigning that had been going on for years was clearly taking a toll on APP's business. And, Greenpeace had some, I've been part of some campaigns that Greenpeace led on a global level, some of which, you know, spanned 40 different countries, where we just saw large companies, whether it was Mattel, Hasbro, Yum Brands, which is the parent company to KFC, Pizza Hut, and Taco Bell, all cutting business with APP. And those are really big global brands that means, you know, millions and millions of dollars in lost sales. They had a toilet paper brand that was the fastest growing in the U.S. that Kmart and others was putting on their store shelves, and Kmart and others pulled it once they learned about what was behind those brands. They basically had to take that brand entirely off the marketplace and later replaced it with another one because the brand was so tarnished. And so it was clear that this NGO campaigning, which was a grassroots campaign, but it was also fueled by really hard-hitting research on the ground, you know, proof of what was going on in some of these places that was, you know, otherwise you wouldn't see. Like years ago, because remote parts of Sumatra is difficult and dangerous to get to, APP could kind of do a lot of this behind the scenes and people wouldn't see it. Now, thanks to new technologies and some resources brought to bear, we can go on the ground, we can look at things from satellites, and we can prove that, you know, who's responsible for this deforestation. So I think it was a confluence of things, just taking a toll on their overall business. And, you know, I think that, you know, there are individuals within companies who do things because it's the right thing to do, but by and large, companies do things because it's best for their bottom line. That's sort of legally what they are most responsible for doing. So APP made a business decision at the end of the day, which was, this is taking too much of a toll on our business and our brand, and it's better for us to fix it now than to continue to go down this path. In terms of the company engagement, that's one of the things that has made us more confident that APP is serious about its commitments. It made a similar commitment in the mid-2000s, which fell apart. And it was clear that there wasn't top-level support in the company, and they didn't seem to have a plan. They just sort of said, sure, we're going to be green now, but didn't really know what it meant and didn't really have a plan. And so that fell apart. And there's a lot of skepticism in 2013 when they announced this new forest conservation policy, whether or not it would hold. And so far, it seems to be holding, even though, as I mentioned before, there are some serious problem areas where they still need to dig down and do better. But the top level management is very engaged. And I think they understand that there's a lot on the line for their business in terms of making this whole thing work. And they seem to be digging down and taking it very seriously.
So Rolf, we've spoken before about the engagement that Greenpeace has had over the years with Kimberly-Clark, and that's a large paper manufacturer as well. And it's been a pretty successful campaign. And you're also engaging in Canada. Greenpeace Canada has been trying to persuade Resolute Forest Products from unsound forestry practices. Can you give us an overview of this campaign with Resolute?
Yeah, just like Indonesia, we start with important forests first. So we never start with a company in mind. And in this case, the Canadian boreal is a huge swath of some of the best forest left on the planet. If you look at maps of what's called intact forest landscapes, that's the technical term, but basically it means the last big old growth forests, the forests that haven't been sliced and diced apart, but are still functioning as big forest ecosystems and can support some of the big cycles of life, death, and renewal, and the big species that depend on those kinds of landscapes. Canada and the Canadian boreal is right near the top. And so we've been working for years to keep some of those last best forests intact. And that's, you're right, why we engaged Kimberly Clark many years ago in what turned out to be a years-long campaign that was, in the end, very successful. And this past August marked the fifth anniversary, maybe not so ironically, the wood anniversary, as it goes in terms of weddings, of collaboration instead of conflict with Kimberly Clark. And we've been pleased with their the tissue giants' follow-through on their commitments not to use endangered forests for their, you know, their throwaway tissue products like Kleenex. But the fight continues because there's still a lot of old growth and intact forests that are being sliced and diced apart with roads and logging. And right now, one of the biggest logging companies in Canada called Resolute Forest Products is engaged in some of that logging. And so, again, we want the marketplace to demonstrate that there's a reason why a company like Resolute, from a business perspective, should consider shifting to a more sustainable way of producing wood. Again, it's not anything about Resolute in particular as a company. We're not out to get them or their bottom line. Just like Asia Pulp and Paper and many of the other large producers of commodities we've engaged in the past, it's about giving them a marketplace incentive to change. And we welcome the day when they see the light. But so far, that has not been the case.
Defining what a rainforest is and a boreal forest, is that a tricky issue that comes into dispute when you engage with these companies?
Yeah, you know, on a technical level, there's actually a lot to sort out.
I can imagine.
Yeah, using the Asia Pulp and Paper example. So if they say, okay, we're not going to do deforestation anymore, then you have to agree on what a forest is. And, you know, listeners might be scratching their heads and saying, well, you kind of know a forest when you see it. And that's true. But in some parts of Indonesia, where forests have been, you know, kind of beaten up, you know, maybe there's been some selective logging of certain trees, and then there's been a road built through it. And then, oh, someone started a rubber plantation on one end of it, and then they abandoned it, and then it grew back. And then it was used for some other agriculture. You know, you can get landscapes that are a mix. And so you have to classify sort of what size of a chunk of forest counts as a forest. It's got to be more than a couple trees, right? And also, what areas that are non-forest should also be conserved. So in this case, some of these peatland areas, regardless of how many trees there are important from a climate perspective. So one of the things on a technical level that Greenpeace has been working with companies on is developing what's called a high carbon stock approach. And it's basically a tool that helps land managers on the ground identify the go zones, you know, where you can make a new paper plantation, and the no-go zones where you should leave that sort of off limits because it's important from as a forest. In the north, forests are very different, and forestry is very different too. And so we use different tools in the Canadian boreal to indicate which forests should remain standing and which ones can be part of active forestry operations. And in Canada, for example, as I mentioned before, the intact forest landscapes, which we can map with satellites because you can kind of see them as big functioning ecosystems without roads and clear cuts in the middle of them. Those are priority areas. And then there's other forests in Canada that might be important for particular threatened wildlife species, like woodland caribou, for example, which, you know, caribou in, we call them caribou in North America. In Europe, they're called reindeer. There's the kind that roam in mostly the sort of the open spaces of tundra. And then there's actually a species in Canada that depends on forests, and their habitat has been shrinking dramatically. So that's another type of forest area that scientists can map, and that we can sit down with companies and say, you know, these areas need to be conserved in some way, and let's talk about how to do that.
Getting back to Resolute for a second, Rolf, they're suing Greenpeace. What does that mean, and what should we expect in this engagement? How long will it be until there's some kind of a resolution?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. So Resolute is suing some Greenpeace Canada and some of my colleagues personally for millions of dollars, and it's what we classify a slap suit or strategic lawsuit against public participation. This tactic or slap suit is not something that Resolute invented. It's been around for a long time. Basically, a way for companies that have a lot more resources than nonprofit organizations like Greenpeace will push back against campaigns with lawyers. And you know, it's often a tactic that companies think is sort of a no-lose proposition for them, because even if they lose in the court or the NGO has to settle out of court, they've tied up a lot of the NGO resources, eaten up a lot of money, and intimidated others who may have been thinking about joining in on it collaborating on a campaign. There's legislation, rules against slap suits in many parts of Canada, but they filed the case in Ontario, where at the time there wasn't any anti-slap regulations. In different parts of the U.S., there are regulations against slap suits, because from a democracy perspective, it's seen, no matter whether you agree on the issues or not, you don't have to be a fan of Greenpeace. A lot of people, both sides of the political spectrum, recognize that in order for us to have a thriving democracy, you need to have a robust civil society that engages in debate, whether right or wrong, and helps make sure that all voices are heard, rather than just the voices of sort of the concentrated wealth and power in a country, which usually leads you down the wrong track. So that's ongoing, and it's certainly something that is a complicating factor in our campaign work, but it doesn't change our positioning towards the company in terms of what we would like them to do and what we think responsible buyers of pulp and paper products and wood products should consider when considering doing business with Resolute.
Oh, where have you been, my blue-eyed son? And where have you been, my darling young one? I stumbled on the side of 12 misty mountains. I've walked and I crawled on 6 crooked highways. I've stepped in the middle of 7 sad forests. I've been out in front of 12 dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard, and it's a hard, and it's a hard, and it's a hard, and it's a hard, and it's a hard rains are gonna fall.
Sea Change Radio is made possible by support from Presidio Graduate School in San Francisco, offering MBA and MPA degrees in sustainable management. Learn more at presidio.edu. This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Rolf Skar. He's the Forest Campaign Director for Greenpeace. So how did Greenpeace red flag Resolute as a business that's not doing things the right way?
Well, we can just look at their track record and where their operations are. And so there's no question that they have engaged in logging in intact forest landscapes and threatened caribou habitat. They also have some outstanding conflicts with Indigenous First Nations in Canada. So these are the people that were in Canada before white Europeans showed up, and they have traditional lands and land rights that need to be respected. And so, for example, the Cree Nation has a formal complaint, lodged a formal complaint against Resolute. So there's a number of reasons why we think their operations, you know, can be improved and should be improved for the betterment of their own business, but also people and the planet.
I read a quote in an article from Bloomberg. A Canadian banker or an analyst, Stephen Atkinson, says, "You have a situation that is running out of control. When will Greenpeace stop?" So when will Greenpeace stop?
Well, again, it's never personal. It's not about any particular business. It's about behavior. And it's about changing that behavior for the benefit of the business, for people and the planet. And we don't think there's any company out there in you know the forestry world who can't do things right. But you know, there needs to be a marketplace incentive to do that. We don't think that you know regulations are realistic right away. We think actually the marketplace is probably the best way to drive some of the change.
Wood products are everywhere in our society, yeah. And it's really difficult for a consumer to know what's what. What are some of the fair practices and other standards that they should look to? What are some of the best nonprofits in your mind that are giving their good housekeeping stamp of approval, if you will?
Yeah, it can be difficult as a, you know, and look, I buy things too. And so I understand how folks just sort of get exhausted and cynical too, because it seems like everything now has some sort of green label on it and is making some sort of green claim, and people view with you know, rightfully so, with some skepticism. But if you're buying a wood product, or if you're buying, you know, paper products, there's one label to look for that's the leading and really the only credible certification body for wood products globally. And it's also the most used one, so it's not uncommon to see it on the back of a pad of paper or even on a 2x4 at Home Depot, and that's the Forest Stewardship Council, or FSC, and it's a voluntary marketplace based a certification scheme that has a lot of rigor to it and has a lot of standards. So, for example, those high conservation value forests and intact forest landscapes that I mentioned, those are things that need to be addressed through the FSC system. It's not perfect, but it does have sort of built-in systems so that if something's not working, people can say, hey, it's not working and this needs to be fixed. And I think that's a pretty good thing about the FSC, is that it doesn't pretend to be perfect, but it does give people a means to sort of a real grievance process. So that's something that, for example, First Nations in Canada could use if they deem that their traditional lands are being used in a way that they don't approve of and they weren't consulted before logging, for example, started to happen. So that's the great thing about the FSC. There's some other schemes that look and feel like the FSC, you know, on a casual level. The best known one in the U.S. is called SFI, or Sustainable Forestry Initiative, and it was set up by the industry and doesn't have some of those same sort of mechanisms to address problems, and also doesn't have some of those same standards. So it falls short in terms of giving consumers the assurances that they need. Another thing to do is to always look for recycled and reclaimed wood if you can. So high post-consumer content paper is always a good thing if you have that choice. And then you can also look, if you're wondering about a particular company, you can look on their websites and see if they have something that seems to be a reputable, you know, wood or paper buying policy.
Rolf Skaar, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Well, thanks, Alex.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Herbie Hancock, Harry Belafonte, and Bob Dylan. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.